Today is March 3rd, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
It's another political Apple Weekly Report. It's been a while since we've done one of these. Congress has a fair use bill on the agenda, and copyright holders are not happy about it. We're going to follow the Fruit Loops this week and find out who's defending what kind of territory. That's in the context machine. Let's start out with the news.
A bill before Congress that strengthens fair use rights of digital media is being opposed by the RAA.
The bill is the Freedom and Innovation Revitalizing U.S. Entrepreneurship. That would be fair use for those of you who can't do acronyms on the fly. Act, and it was introduced by Representatives Rick Boucher, who's a Democrat from Virginia, and John Doolittle, who's a Republican from California. The bill's intent is to exempt the makers of high-tech gear from liability based on the actions of their customers. But the bill is also specifically designed to allow consumers to skip commercials, transmit media files over a home network, and allow broader use of copyrighted material for substantial public use. Which would include things like news, criticism, reporting, or research.
Now, Congressman Boucher also made this comment in a statement. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act dramatically tilted the copyright balance toward complete copyright protection at the expense of the public's right to fair use.
Now, I know a lot of TMO readers agree with that particular position, but you'll be surprised to know, I'm sure, that you and the Recording Industry Association of America, the RIAA, don't agree. They objected to making manufacturers exempt from infractions by the users and said in a statement that the difference between hacking done for non-infringing purposes and hacking done to steal is impossible to determine and enforce.
And here's something we didn't expect. Apple, Samsung, and SanDisk are all targets of an MP3 patent infringement suit, but this one is not from Alcatel-Lucent. Instead, Texas MP3 Technologies is claiming that these companies are infringing on an MP3-related patent it purchased from Sigmatel in 2006. Now, if you missed out on last week's show, it seems that MP3 patent lawsuits are making the rounds lately. Last week, a San Diego court ruled that Microsoft must pay Alcatel-Lucent $1.52 billion for MP3-related patent infringements. And Texas MP3 Technologies filed its lawsuit in Marshall, Texas, which, by coincidence, not, is a popular location for patent infringement cases thanks to its reputation for juries that are more likely to rule in favor of the plaintiff.
So we'll keep an eye on that story. And finally, for the news this week, a few weeks ago, we delayed a discussion about the possibility that EMI might be the first record label to sell their songs without DRM. Turns out that was a good idea. An upfront payment agreement couldn't be reached, and the talks have stalled. The music retailers supposedly involved in this were Apple, Microsoft, Real Networks, Yahoo, and Amazon. EMI wanted an agreement that included a large upfront payment to compensate them for illegal copying of the media files that they would be selling without DRM. And the retailers presented a counteroffer that was lower. An agreement couldn't be reached, and the talks fell apart. So the feeling in the industry is that the first music company to strike this kind of a deal, a no DRM deal, with a major music online retailer would set a precedent and that the other labels under pressure would be compelled to follow suit. So, back to square one on that one. And that's enough of that. Let's get right into the context machine here and talk about fair use here. Now, I'm not sure how familiar people generally are with the idea of fair use. So it's probably a good idea here, Jeff, to step back and just ask the basic question, what is fair use?
Okay. In a nutshell, fair use is what happens when you take, say, a music recording that you have and make a copy for your own personal use. And in a nutshell, that's what fair use is. You have purchased, in essence, the license to use the music, and you get to make with it within reason. You get to make copies of what it is that you purchased for your own backups, or like if you want to make a mix CD to put in your car, that all counts as fair use. The problem we're having, though, is that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act restricts how we make these copies and, in essence, makes or forbids us from being able to take things like DVDs that we've purchased at the store, movie DVDs, and copying them for our own backups as well.
All right, so there are two parts here. The first one is what's fair use and what did the Digital Millennium Copyrights Act do to them? Sounds like what you're saying about fair use. When you buy something, buy a CD, buy a DVD, have a program come in through your TV, any of those things, you haven't so much purchased or gotten access to the specific piece of plastic. But rather the right to use and view and enjoy that content. And the idea is that the format in which it shows up, whether it's coming in over the airwaves or recorded on your TiVo or whether it's on a plastic CD or on your iPod, it's all the same content. And so you should have the right to move it around however you like. Is that about the speed of it?
That's pretty much it. And we did go through this battle back in the 80s with Betamax and VHS when the recording industry said, no way, it's not right for people to record a TV show and then watch it later. And ultimately the court said, RIAA, you're wrong, and now we can do that.
All right. So that's fair use. And now let's talk a little bit about the DMCA, as it's called, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. So it sounds, from what you were saying before, I think a lot of Mac users, for example, are aware that, or iTunes users generally, are aware that even though you can take a CD and put it in your computer and rip it to iTunes, you can't do that with a DVD. Right? You can't just put the DVD in your computer and rip it into iTunes and have it as a movie in iTunes. Is
Right.
that somehow tied in with the DMCA?
Yes, it is. Absolutely. And it's part, actually, it's one of the big things that really has consumers pissed off because most consumers really don't distinguish between I can copy music for backup, personal use, whatever, but you're telling me that I can't do the same thing with a movie. What gives? And we now have this multi-tier playing field that it's actually become very confusing for a lot of consumers. And for the RIAA, it's more of a thorn in the side. They would love for us to not be able to copy CDs for personal use as well. You got to love those guys.
Gotta love it. And so now let's get into a little bit of the interests that surround all of this. Clearly, the recording industry, the movie industry, other people who have an interest in selling you a copy, a new copy of this thing on every different format that comes out for you, one for your computer, one for your car, one for your living room, whatever. Obviously, those people would love to see fair use restricted. Is there an argument to be made that anyone who holds a copyright, Joe songwriter or independent filmmakers, should be excited about fair use? Is there, or I'm sorry, about the DMCA, the idea that their copyrights are being protected?
You know, some artists are happy with it, from what I understand. Others definitely not. And there's plenty of artists out there that feel that the DMCA is actually restricting their ability to get their music out in front of their audience. And there's bands out there that will openly tell people, go ahead and just take our music, we don't care, much to the recording industry's chagrin. So you've got people on both sides of this. And I think that adds a lot to to the headaches that go along with trying to sort out exactly what to do and what really does count as fair use.
Now, like you're saying, it is possible for Joe Songwriter to, you know, record a song in GarageBand and post it as an MP3 on MySpace and say, hey, everybody, go ahead and download this, use it as you like. So people can still distribute stuff freely. It's just that, for example, one of the best comments I heard about the Steve Jobs letter on music, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, was from a guy named Dave Slusher, who's a blogger and podcaster. He does the Evil Genius Chronicles. Very sharp guy. And he talks in one blog post that someone pointed out to me. He says, you know what? If Apple is really so focused on this, and he's not the only person that's pointed this out, if Apple is really so focused on getting rid of DRM, they should just do it. They should just allow people to post their content on the iTunes Music Store with no DRM restrictions. So all the independent labels that are signed up through iTunes and individual artists maybe that are represented through big labels, they should be allowed to make their music DRM-less. And a lot of people presumably would pick up on that. It sounds, some of the complaints I've heard from independent artists are the complaints, you know, I want to be able to distribute my music freely through the big services like iTunes, but I can't do that without getting into this DRM game.
Right, because they have to get in with the label, and then the label dictates to the artist how their music will be distributed, which totally sucks. I mean, I really think that artists deserve to be able to distribute their product however they feel fits them or suits them the best. So now, one thing about the iTunes Store that people don't pick up on a lot is that as an independent artist, if you're not on a label, you can distribute your music for free, and you can make it very easy for people to find, and that's called a podcast.
Just in case anyone out there didn't know what a podcast was.
Right.
All the folks listening to this, so that's what if you've never heard a podcast before, that's what a podcast is.
Exactly. So, yes, there are ways for independent artists to get their music out in front of people through the iTunes Store, but once they end up signing with a label, suddenly their hands are tied. Very uncool.
All right, let's talk a little bit about politics here. The sponsors of this bill... always important to look closely at the messengers. The sponsors of this bill, a Democrat from Virginia and a Republican from California, Jeff and I were doing a little Google work before this and looking at where their districts come from. A little bit of information about them. Congressman Boucher, who's from Virginia, is from Virginia's 9th District, which is kind of in the southwest of Virginia, really near, nestled in between North Carolina and West Virginia. So it's a pretty rural area relative to, say, Northern Virginia, which is right near Washington. That's kind of a suburb of Washington. So he's in that really rural part of southwestern Virginia. And then Congressman Doolittle from California, Republican from California, is in the sort of mountainous region west and a little bit north of San Francisco, right near the Nevada border. So these are not really urban. When I first saw this, I thought, you know what? I bet these people, I bet one of them is from Silicon Valley and the other one is from the tech corridor in Northern Virginia. That's actually not true. But let's talk a little bit about what the motivations are here. Why is it that that congressmen from Virginia and California might be behind these bills?
Well, I think you also need to point out that this is a bipartisan bill, and that's a big thing, especially with the way the Congress has been running for the past few years. So that part kind of surprised me. But I think a lot of the motivation based on where these people are has to do with, it could be several things. It could be that these two representatives really strongly feel that the U.S. citizens are getting screwed, and they want to stand up and do something about it, even though they're most likely going to get slapped down. So if nothing else, they're raising awareness about the restrictions that are being placed on the way we use content we're purchasing. Another option is they want to raise awareness about themselves so that they can move on to bigger and better things.
That would be, for example, something like a run for Senate, I assume. One of the reasons I would think Virginia and California, like I was saying, both of them are tech centers, Northern Virginia and of course, Silicon Valley in California. Those areas are very tech savvy. I mean, you have a lot of people that work in the technology industry. You have a lot of people that use digital media more than in, say, Nebraska or Alabama. There's just a bigger tech culture. There are, I'm sure, more iPods per capita in Virginia and California than there are in many of the Midwestern states.
So, wait a second. Are you implying that government representatives might actually be representing their public?
Well, at a minimum, they are almost certainly going to be petitioning for those things that get the people in their districts or in their states fired up. And this is the distinction for people living outside of the U.S. who might not be as familiar with some of the subtleties here. Congressmen, there are two houses in the U.S. Congress. Congressmen refer to people in the House of Representatives. They represent a very small district within a state that's based on the population. So every district representative in the House of Representatives represents roughly an equal number of citizens, whereas senators, the other house of the U.S. Congress, represent the entire state. And so one of the details here is that if, in general, the state is very tech-savvy and interested in this stuff, even if the people in this congressman's district are not necessarily all that fired up about this particular issue, if they're running for state office and they want to build their credentials with the techie people up in Northern Virginia, then they want to get behind stuff that, as a state, are going to be very popular things. So it's kind of a detail in how U.S. politics works. But that aside, there are a couple of other things that occur to me here.
Do tell.
We don't know necessarily how any of this works. We haven't gone and spoken to the people on their staff, and you can get, you know, if you happen to have people on Capitol Hill, you can actually ask staff people these questions, and very often they'll give you pretty straight answers. But in the meantime, we might as well just speculate through some of this stuff. Some of the other options, some of the other possibilities. You know, this is an issue. When I read a story like this, the issue of fair use is not something that gets a lot of national attention. It's not something that, by and large, a lot of people know about. The people that do know about it and have the ability to petition Congress are groups like the RIAA. They are very well represented, and other copyright holders are very well represented on Capitol Hill. So this is something that has corporate interest very strongly behind it. They're very prepared to defend their interests on Capitol Hill, and there's really no organized voice for the other half of this. There's a consumer rights group, I think we said in the article, that's supporting it. But by and large,
right,
there is not mobilized national attention on fair use as an issue. It's just not something that people in the U.S. get all that fired up about, except nerds like us, I guess.
Well, the nerds like us, but the move that Apple made when they posted Steve Jobs' letter on their website that denounces digital copyright, that was a brilliant move, because what Apple did was they took something that for now, or until now, has been limited to special interest groups and tech people like us that really have no life, so we can follow this stuff. And they opened it up to the public, and the amount of press that Apple got to raise the awareness towards the whole thing with copyrights and fair use, I mean, you can't buy that kind of publicity. So that was a brilliant move. And what I speculate might be the beginning of a grassroots effort to free people from having to be restricted by all these arcane and draconian copyright restrictions.
It may also be some of the motivation in the timing behind the press releases that just came out, you know, a couple days ago about this act that these two congressmen said, you know what, there's all this stuff going on right now with Apple and DRM, and maybe we should send out this press release now while it's in people's heads.
Oh, sure. And that can only help Apple as well, because even though the letter that Apple posted is a great letter and it really raises awareness, don't believe for a minute that Steve Jobs wrote that letter and had it put on the website out of the goodness of his heart and for a need to help his fellow man. Apple still has to deal with the issues that are going on in Europe, where countries are trying to force Apple through legislation to open its Fair Play digital rights management technology. So I'm sure there's a lot of that mixed in with the letter too. And press releases like this about this bill can only help Apple too.
So we'll see what happens. And one of the things that's most interesting about this is that kind of building sense of attention. And who knows, things like this fall apart very quickly. Net neutrality, for example, evaporated as a subject after that bill failed. And
yeah, it sure did.
This may very well happen here again, but who knows? We'll see.
Well, my prediction is that the RAAA will manage to get this shot down, even if it makes it to the Senate. It's not going to make it to the president's desk to be signed. That's my speculation, and I really want to be proved wrong, but we'll have to wait and see.
We'll see. And if you have comments in the meantime, go ahead and send them to roundup@macobserver.com. We'd love to hear what you guys think about this story. Let's talk about it. And, of course, if we're getting comments, then we'll make sure that we talk about them on later shows.
Especially if they're comments that talk nice about us.
Yeah, well, flattery will get you everywhere.
Oh, most certainly. Okay, and on that note, let's head into our product roundup.
Old school gamers have another excuse to spend more time with their iPods now that Namco's Ms. Pac-Man is available for the fifth generation iPod. The game features four mazes and 256 levels, animated intermissions, the original arcade music, and training play mode. Ms. Pac-Man is priced at $5 US.
And Parallels announced on Tuesday that it released a major update to its desktop for Mac, the virtualization software that lets Macs run Windows, Linux, and other operating systems at the same time as Mac OS X. The big new feature is Coherence, which displays Windows applications without actually having to include the Windows desktop at the same time. And Parallels Desktop is priced at $80.
And finally this week, just a quick product roundup. Jeff reviewed a couple products, a game called Frenzik and the Radtech Bluetooth 500 mobile mouse, which is actually, I think I might have that little travel mouse. It's kind of a nice gizmo.
It is a nice little mouse. Absolutely. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Apple Weekly Report.
Our content is written by the fine staff of the Mac Observer. Thank you, Mr. Gamut. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The base is by Boom for TMO. The Podcast and Portable Media Expo announced that early bird registration is now open. It's for the fall. But if you're thinking of going and you want to save a few bucks on the registration, go ahead and take a look at that. That is all I've got this week.
So please stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online.